This is BBC Radio 5 Live, available on the BBC Sounds app with Emma Barnett.
Good morning. A new law to protect victims of so-called stranger stalking is now in force, but campaigners say there's still a need for extra measures to help protect victims. The new order in place is called a stalking protection order. Police apply for them, which then takes the onus off the victim to stop the harassment. The order prevents a stalker approaching someone or going to certain areas, and there'll be a criminal penalty for those that breach them. Last year, I spoke to the Newsnight presenter, Emily Maitlis, whose stalker was jailed for breaching a restraining order. While she was positive about the introduction of stalking protection orders, she told me she felt more needed to be done to stop some stalkers breaching any sort of order time and time again.
What you really want to say is, it's happened again, you know, please do what you need to do.
And then a whole system.
And then it all kicks in. This is why I say that the sort of snakes and ladders thing, you think you're progressing and then it happens and you're literally starting, you know, you're back down at number three on the board and you're just trying to start all over again. And that's when it gets exhausting. And actually, the trouble is, I don't want to be mad with anyone else. You know, I'm not even mad with him. It's ill health. But actually, it makes you feel like, why is nothing I say having a permanent effect on this situation?
So a stalking protection order, while it might plug a gap in one bit of the system, it sounds like the legislation itself and the way that it's handled needs a complete overhaul.
It's great to have that, if you like, that key. You know, what the injunction, the restraining order, is a key that allows you to say, look, you know, this is what I've got. This has been his past criminal behaviour. But it's just that each time you feel like you're going through 16 volts to get to the next bit.
So if you could have one thing that would be changed, having unwittingly become an almost expert in this area and the different ways in which you've got to report it, what do you think would make a difference?
Well, I think Sarah Wollaston's bill is a very interesting one, because I think she is spotting a really important gap between how long it takes to bring people to court after you report it. And of course, you're at your most vulnerable then, because you've still got to sort of, as it were, believe in the system. But, you know, my problem is, I suppose, that I wrote a witness statement. That one that was read out in court was written in August. And between then, he breached again between the writing of it and February. So I get lovely messages of support from people saying, oh, you must be so relieved it's all over. Oh, you must be so relieved he's in prison. And I just think, you don't understand.
What's
you know,
between
you don't this? Understand that this has literally been going on for 20 years. You know, it feels like a sort of a chronic illness sort of thing for me. It's not that it ever goes away. It's not that I ever believe it will stop or he will stop or the system will manage to prevent it properly. But as I say, you know, partly it's the legal system, but partly it's we haven't clearly found a way of finding something that is both deterrent and helpful to the perpetrator in a way that would make him stop.
It's Emily Maitlis on the difficulty of stopping serial stalkers, and that description of being stalked like a chronic illness, that comparison has stayed with me ever since we spoke. Although the order is welcomed by campaigners then, there are now calls for a national stalkers register so that serial offenders can be more easily identified. Samantha Bumford's stalker was jailed in February, and in court she discovered he had previous convictions, including 3 prison sentences for similar offences. Arabella has also experienced stalking. We're just using her first name today. And I'm also joined by Rachel Horman, who is the chair of Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service. Good morning to all of you. Rachel, if I could just start with you, and you didn't mind explaining exactly how do the new stalking protection orders help?
Well, they can help, but they are no substitute for charges, and that's the first thing that I would like to say, really. In my view, these are really helpful in addition to charges, because the existence of one of these orders is not a criminal record or anything like that. It's actually a civil court order, an injunction type of thing. And what would happen is the police can actually obtain these on behalf of victims. So victims don't have to go through the additional stress and expense of getting these themselves through the courts. And they can prevent stalkers from coming near them, from doing all sorts of things, really. It's fairly wide ranging. It depends on what they are doing. And it can also put some positive requirements on them as well, for example, to undergo a mental health assessment. The great thing about these orders is that they last at least 2 years, and the previous domestic abuse orders, which were similar, would only last for 28 days, which was nowhere near long enough. So the time is great. And also, if the stalker breaches one of these orders, that will then become a criminal offence, and that will be subject to up to 5 years in prison. But I'm really concerned that these orders are used instead of criminal charges, and that would be a mistake.
I think that's an important distinction to make. Thank you for that, Rachel. I'll come back to you shortly, but let me speak now to Samantha. Welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you very much.
Tell us about your experience of stalking, if you don't mind. How did it start?
Sure, so it started on social media. So the person who stalked me is called Jonathan Deal, and he added me on Facebook, and I thought nothing of it because I'm one of the Miss England girls. It's sort of all about getting the exposure for all the people that I sort of represent, charities, businesses. So I thought, well, you know, I'll accept like I do to sort of anyone that adds me. And it started with likes and comments on various posts that I'd done. And then it got a little bit more, and he started turning up to events. So I was promoting events, and he started turning up to them. And at the time, the first event he turned up to was Sandfest, which is quite a big event down here in Poole, in Dorset. And he came over to me and he said, "Oh, hello, Samantha, it's Jonathan Deal." And I thought nothing of it. I was like, "Oh, right, okay." Tried to rack my brains as to who this guy was that had just come over and knew exactly who I was. And then afterwards, we took a photo, you know, as I do with sort of all of my supporters. It went on social media, and then I worked out, oh, hold on a minute, this is the guy that likes all my stuff. And I thought, oh, he's a very nice supporter. So at the start, it was very much, you know, from my point of view, it was a lot of support that I was getting from one person. Didn't think anything of it. And then time went on, and he started to come to more and more of my events. He followed me to Miss England, which is one of the biggest events I've done. And then became extremely obsessed, started saying how in love with me he was. Things got a little bit out of hand. And then obviously that's when sort of he did a really weird post on social media to about sort of 20 different groups in Bournemouth. And I'm sort of having a bit of a panic, and CEO of the House of Icons, Savita Kay, she actually said to me, "You need to call the police now." And I thought, what? All he's done is, you know, followed me around. Obviously, I've now blocked him on social media because I'm getting a bit freaked out. He did various posts saying how in love with me he was. And
so that was were those the posts that started to alarm, or was there a particular one?
The particular one was that, you know, he did a music video. He was an aspiring sort of singer. And he did a song on Facebook, and he auditioned for Britain's Got Talent, and he said, "I'm devoting this song to my love, Samantha Bumford." And at that point, sort of all my friends and family were going, "Nah, Sam, like, this is serious now, you know, you need to sort of get rid of him." So obviously I did. Then he followed me to work, so that was the next step, which was absolutely terrifying. He grabbed me and tried to kiss me. That was just awful.
Outside your work?
So outside my work, he grabbed me and told me that I needed to unblock him. But at the Miss England finals, he grabbed me, said, "Oh, I'm so proud of you," and tried to kiss me, which was very terrifying, as you can imagine.
Yes. And for you then, did you get the police involved at the point of that post, and the posts intensifying online, or did you do it after he followed you to work?
Yeah, so I was at I do various different events, all sorts, and I was at a magic show, believe it or not. And during this magic show, I got a phone call from David Wood from Help for Homeless Veterans and Savita Kay from the House of Icons. And David's going to me, he's posted everywhere, "You need to have a look at this." And Savita's saying, "If you don't call the police, I will." So it was kind of a very big panic, and sort of there were lots of different factors that it was telling me, oh, you need to call the police. But I mean, at the start, it was very much like, even with these posts going on, I was like, oh, maybe he's just obsessed. But I had a friend who wrote a book called Wings, the name's Sunny Angel. And inside that book said all the different things to look out for being stalked. And then that was it. I'd spoke to her, I'd spoke to Savita, I'd spoke to Dave, my mum and my dad, my sister, they were all pushing me and saying, right, you need to deal with this now. So that was really when I called the police.
And he went to court. I mean, tell us what, how you got from that to that.
It was very strange. So I called the police and I explained his name and they kind of went quiet and they said, we'll be over within 24 hours. I thought, oh, okay, that's good. They came over that night, funny enough. So they say within 24 hours, but they were over that night. And I remember it very well. I'd obviously been to the magic show and had a big panic, called the police there. Then I'd gone for a curry down my road and just sat sort of chilling, called the police. And they came over that night. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. And they sat on my sofa and they said, do you realise how serious this is? And I was like, well, really? I said, well, yeah, it's quite concerning. And sort of mum, dad and I sort of looked at each other and it was very, in a way, mum was going, you know, why is it so serious? And they wouldn't tell us until the point that I can't remember what mum said, but they then turned around and said, oh, he's known, if that makes sense. And we sort of looked at each other and went, oh, this isn't good. This is slightly worrying. This guy has got previous, but obviously we don't know at this stage. We're just thinking because the police cannot physically tell you anything. And then they said at the end of the conversation, they said, right, just to let you know, we're going to go and arrest him. And as you can imagine, I'm sat there going, why is this guy being arrested? All he needs is sort of a little quiet word saying, please leave her alone. She doesn't want the contact. Simple. But they were taken extremely seriously. Now, the next thing that happened was, a couple of days later, I was walking for the House of Icons with Savita, who put in extra security to look after me. And I'm sort of doing the rehearsals and practices. And I get a phone call from the police saying, we've arrested him. And the next step is court. And I'm going, well, this is just ridiculous now. This guy's been arrested. Now it's going to court. You know, all he needed was just a quiet word. And obviously, I'm not thinking he's got previouses because I take everyone as they come. Unless I'm told, I won't judge someone. It's part of who I am. So the next steps, obviously, we did to House of Icons and then came home and then got the court papers through, said it was going to court, then turned up at court. And it was the most surreal moment of my life because I sat in the room and I remember all my friends being there. They were announcing sort of a couple of his previouses. I see 19 previous convictions. And I just looked at my dad and I burst into tears and I grabbed his hand and I was squeezing it tight. I could not believe this. I was like, this is ridiculous. Why, you know, why has this kind of happened to me sort of thing? And then at that point, he was given a restraining order, which said that he couldn't contact me indirectly or directly. And then the next court date, he had breached that. So in the lead up, so this sort of happened in September, really. And then in November, I went to London again for the House of Icons Christmas party. And while I was there, we were taking photos. And he started commenting and liking the photos, which is obviously a breach of his bail conditions because court wasn't over. It was just saying that, you know, they couldn't make a decision on that day because he had 19 previous convictions. So this kind of went on and on and on. And obviously my anxiety is getting worse and worse. And what happened was I was in absolute bits. I started walking around the house, locking all the doors. I was saying I couldn't go out on my own. I had, you know, I always had someone sort of come out with me and almost, you know, be sort of like a bodyguard, which is crazy. I mean, I'm 25. Well, I was 25 at the time and 26 now. But to have no sort of, you know, time to myself and have to have someone sort of follow me around was quite a very strange time in my life. So anyway, we then went back to court and obviously knowing that he'd had all these previous convictions we decided that we were going to go ahead with it. And the barrister that I had turned around and said, you know, because he'd breached actually that before, obviously I'd said about him breaching and he'd liked more and more photos. He actually contacted the Bournemouth Hospital charity and was speaking about me, and which is completely out of order because obviously one of my titles for Miss England is Miss South Coast Charity Queen. So he started sort of contacting charities, which was quite scary for me because it was like, he's really not giving up. Anyway, so it comes down to February, and I did London Fashion Week again. The December one. So this was the one before that. This is what became very confusing for me and a lot of others. We went to court, and basically because he'd breached, and I had the police over sort of 4 o'clock in the morning before we went to court in December. It was literally 6 days before Christmas. And he'd breached because he'd liked, commented, and he'd also, my best friend Samantha Shapley, he had tried to like and comment on her photos. So she was very heavily involved because we spend a lot of time together. And he'd done that. So when we went to court, he knew he was slapped with the piece of, well, his representative was slapped with a piece of paper saying, look, you've breached your bail, mate. You're in a lot of trouble, sort of thing. So they decided to do a plea bargain, which is where they drop. So we dropped some of the charges for a higher charge for him.
And how long was he sentenced to prison for?
Well, this was what got very confusing. So originally, when everything happened, we were told that he was going to go away for a minimum of 6 months and a maximum of 5 years. Because it was very serious. It was actually stalking with violence. However, something happened along the way, miscommunications, loss of paperwork. And unfortunately, the reason he only went away for 6 months was because they lost the paperwork and they couldn't prove that it was agreed that it was a Section 2, which is stalking with violence. And that's why he only got 6 months. And I am working on trying to sort of appeal it and get him longer because it was unfortunately a little bit of a mess up that happened.
So he's technically going to be out at the end of the summer?
Yes, at the moment, yes. But
let me just ask then, has it made you, you describe that period of locking up the house, not going out without anyone, has it made you change your behaviour beyond that time? Have you continued to behave differently? Have you stopped posting things online as much?
Absolutely. It has unfortunately changed me. I mean, lots of people know me by attending sort of 750 events and having raised £50,000 for various different charities, to then now where, you know, I flew in from a trip in China in Chengdu on Friday. I landed on Saturday at 10 o'clock at night. And that whole time I was in China, I felt safe. I knew I was nowhere near him. And I let my hair down and I represented England. And it was absolutely incredible. But to come home, it's almost like I'm almost putting myself in that position again. And I know that, you know, if things don't go well and I don't get the it doesn't get confirmed that I can appeal the court case because of the mess up of the courts, I'm a bit concerned that obviously, yes, he is going to come out. And what's going to happen? I mean, myself and Samantha, like I said, my best friend, we've both got a lifetime restraining order over him. So we know that he can't come near us. But, you know, does that stop him? If the fact that him going to court, and he's been to court a couple of times before, and he's been to prison about at least three times I know of, is this going to stop him? And I kind of think, well, actually, no, I'm quite concerned about him coming out, even though I'm, you know, kind of going around like, oh, you know, I'm really happy he's away. But what happens when he comes out? Is he going to come for me? You've heard of these horror stories of, you know, Jonathan Vass, where he killed that girl, and he stabbed her sort of 72 times in a car park. How quickly can that happen? It is a scary, scary time.
Samantha, thank you for your story. Let me bring in Arabella at this point, because Arabella, you've also had experience of stalking. Welcome to the programme.
Hello.
How did your experience start?
Mine actually started in 2013. It was a very kind of brief conversation that I had with my stalker. I'd opened a shop in Soho, and at that time I was modelling, so social media, magazines, there was some kind of press around the fact that I'd opened the shop. Anyway, he made his way to the shop and stood in the doorway, and I asked him what he wanted, if he was okay, if I could help him. And very bluntly, he told me that, you know, he knew who I was and he thought that it was disgusting that I'd been modelling. I'd been modelling in bikinis in lads' mags. And he kind of made a comment, you know, he said to me, what you've been doing is basically as bad as prostitution. Look, I dealt with, you know, people coming in and meet me before from, who knew me from magazines, but I'd never dealt with anything that was kind of as aggressive as that. After that, I actually had a panic button fitted in the shop. Anyway, I didn't see him for what felt like probably 4 or 5 years. One day I looked up, and I was working in the shop. I looked up and I kind of made eye contact with this person across the road. And I really didn't think anything of it. And then after a few days, I just kept seeing this person. Like, we'd randomly just make eye contact as he was walking past the shop. And it all dawned on me that actually I recognised his face. And it was the same guy that I'd spoken to in 2013. Anyway, I saw him every other day, once a week, for probably a month. And I started to rationalise the reason that I was seeing him was that because I actually probably worked in the area, or maybe he had friends in the area, or some reason like that. That wasn't the case. I literally saw him every single day, up to 10, 12 times a day, solidly for about 6 months. He would stand outside the, you know, his behaviour changed. He would actually stand outside the shop with his arms folded and just stare into my eyes. There was never a smile. There was never a wave. Sometimes he'd come right up to the shop window and actually put, you know, like peer into the shop. People in my shop would stand in front of me and he would literally move his body and look around them to look at me. He was completely unfazed by anyone else watching him intimidate me. He was never with anyone else. At the point that I mean, it had happened dozens and dozens and dozens of times before I actually said to my friend, look, I'm going to have to just say something to him because I don't understand where this has come from or why he's so angry with me. So I actually stopped him outside and said, look, you know, if you don't, you've got no business being here. I don't know why you keep coming to look at me, but just, you need to stop and I will call the police. That didn't stop.
Did he reply?
He literally said nothing to me. He just walked off. I had male friends actually stop him on the street and say, listen, mate, you seriously have to stop this. And, you know, I thought that when that had happened, that probably he'd be a bit scared because they were men. His reply was just like, it's a free country. I can stand here and I can do what I want. So after that, I'd called the police. I called 101. Weird situation to explain because obviously he's never, you know, like Samantha, he's never tried to grab me. He's never tried to have a go at me. It's just
this constant watcher.
Just coming to look at me, which was just bizarre. So I explained it to the police. They logged that as harassment. And the officer actually called me back and he said, look, what you've told me has really unsettled me. I'm going to need you to call 999 the next time you see him. From then on, it just went on for just months and months and months because we had no idea of a name, a location. Like, he'd just appear and disappear. So by the time I'd called the police, he was gone and he was gone onto Oxford Street. So it was so difficult for them to find him. We actually ended up working together with like the whole of the other shops in Soho. And actually people were messaging me at, you know, when they'd seen him. So I knew that he was around and we were able to, you know, finally catch him after probably 7 months of this just ridiculous behaviour.
And what happened?
Well, he was arrested. He was taken in for questioning for 24 hours. They were actually unable to kind of question him any sooner than that because they actually needed to wait for a responsible adult to be there. He suffers quite badly with mental health issues. I was called by the police after they released him, just to say, you know, Arabella, we've released him. We've given him a warning of harassment. We've told him not to come to the area, and he's on bail currently. And as the police, you know, they were trying to make me feel better. They said, you know, now we've had a chat with him, we don't think he'll be back. He hasn't done this before. We don't think he's, you know, we think it will be okay. As the police were saying that to me, I got a message from my shop to say, actually, he's just walked from Charing Cross Police Station and he's outside the shop again. So, you know, each time I'd got over one hurdle of thinking that actually, you know, me talking to him would stop it. A guy friend talking to him would, him being arrested would stop. Nothing stopped. We ended up going to court, given a restraining order. He had 30 days rehabilitation, and he didn't actually make it to the end of the 30 days before he was back. So, you know, you're jumping over so many hurdles constantly, and every time you think that that will be a solution, it's like they move the goalpost is moved again, and you're kind of back to square one.
And what ended up bringing this to a close?
I mean, to be honest, I still sadly believe that I will see him again.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
all these years on.
Yeah. I think, you know.
Has he ever been imprisoned for what he's done?
No, he was, when we eventually, we went back to court because he broke the restraining order. You know, he was put on tag. He wasn't, you know, a restraining order is up to 5 years imprisonment. He was put on tag. I mean, there must be a reason that the judge felt that was, the right, correct punishment for him. But I think the prospect of him actually going to prison has shaken him slightly. But I also believe that his mental health is so great that actually, I don't think that a restraining order would completely stop him. I mean, it hasn't stopped him in the past, so I can't really see why he won't be back.
When did you last see him?
I last saw him at the end of last year, so.
So this is just a constant?
Yeah, it's sad to say, but I don't believe that's the last time I'll see him, so.
And for you then, what do you make of the current measures are there? Are you in favour of a register? Are you in favour of orders? What do you want to suggest?
I think a register would, yeah, definitely in need, because I'm pretty sure that the person that was, you know, stalking and harassing me, I'm pretty sure that at the point that he, you know, has given up doing that to me, that he may actually be in another area right now doing that to somebody else. Because I believe that actually what he was gaining from, you know, he was gaining something from intimidating me and having some kind of power over watching me. You know, he used to laugh when he'd seen me cry. So it was a very like sadistic behaviour that he was doing. So I actually believe that he's probably in another area right now doing it to somebody else. Yeah.
Gosh, it's incredible. Both stories are incredibly unsettling. Thank you very much, Arabella, for sharing yours. And Samantha, thank you to you for sharing those, because it's yours, because it's just, it's horrifying, and it comes in different forms, which I think both of your stories illustrate. Rachel, to come back to you and give you the final word, you're obviously very familiar with the differences there can be between these sorts of experiences. What are you pushing for now?
Well, Paladin have been campaigning for the serial register for some time, and the Home Affairs Select Committee fairly recently recommended that the government should take that up as part of their domestic abuse bill. We were really disappointed to see that the government didn't take it up, and we think that without that, this will continue to happen. These stalkers are dangerous. Women are unfortunately murdered by stalkers on a regular basis, so we do need to do things differently.
Rachel Horman, thank you very much. The Chair of Paladin, the National Stalking Advocacy Service, will bring you an up-to-date take on that as and when the story moves on or doesn't, because we want to keep a focus on stalking here on the programme, as it's something where there has been some shift in policy and in the change of the law, but as you can hear, not quite enough. And the onus is usually on the people being stalked. So with that in mind, thank you very much to Arabella and Samantha Bumford for sharing their stories with us, with all of us today. Coming back to your